still no progress in the latest talks between Ukrainian and Russian officials as the Russian invasion enters its third week. A Ukrainian parliament official says at least 71 children have died due to Russia's invasion. We'll discuss that as well as the plight of displaced Ukrainians with Maria Ermina Valdeavilla Gallardo of the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. The latest COVID-19 variant, Deltacron, detected in Europe. The World Health Organization warns Filipinos against letting their guard down against the pandemic. Acting WHO representative to the Philippines, Dr. Rajendra Yadav, joins us later on in the program. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. For joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad to have you with us today. We begin with the latest on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The 64-kilometer-long Russian military convoy has largely dispersed. That convoy was headed to Kyiv, but it had been stalled for nearly 2 weeks. Satellite images taken by Maxar Technologies on Thursday showed armored units from the convoy maneuvering through the surrounding towns. They appear to have been redeployed and repositioned into forests and tree-lined areas near the village of Lubyanka. Maxar also said multiple rocket launchers and several fuel trucks are repositioned a few miles from an airbase. The foreign ministers of Ukraine and Russia failed to reach a ceasefire deal during talks in Turkey. Details in this report.
Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said no progress was made on achieving a ceasefire in Ukraine in talks with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov on Thursday. Hosted by Turkey, they were the first high-level talks between the two countries since Moscow invaded its neighbor. Kuleba told reporters the most critical situation was in the southern port of Mariupol, but that Lavrov did not commit to a humanitarian corridor there.
I want to confirm once again that Ukraine did not surrender, is not surrendering, and will not surrender. We are ready for diplomacy. We are looking for diplomatic solutions. But while there are no such solutions, we will be dedicated. By sacrificing ourselves to defend our land, our people from Russian aggression.
Самовіддано, жертвуючи собою, захищати нашу землю, наших людей від російської.
Lavrov said Moscow wanted what he called a friendly, demilitarized Ukraine and reiterated a Russian demand that Ukraine should adopt neutral status. Russia has presented proposals to Ukraine and wants a reply, he said. Kuleba said Russia was demanding Ukraine's surrender. Lavrov said President Vladimir Putin would not refuse to meet with his Ukrainian counterpart Volodymyr Zelensky, but the meeting would have to be substantive and focus on specifics. Russia's invasion, which it calls a special military operation, has uprooted more than 2 million people. The United Nations says it's the fastest humanitarian crisis in Europe since World War II. Lavrov said the proper venue for diplomacy should be Belarus, an ally of Moscow that has hosted several rounds of lower-level talks. They have so far yielded only limited progress on opening up humanitarian corridors.
The leaders of the European Union gather in France to agree on a joint response to the war in Ukraine. The summit acknowledged the tectonic shift in European history caused by the invasion, and a draft statement indicates that the leaders are ready to move on with more sanctions on Russia. But the appeal from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to fast-track his country's EU membership has been rejected.
We will have a discussion on EU membership. That's important because we need to send a strong signal to Ukraine and the Ukrainians. But at the same time, we have to be careful. Can we begin the membership process with a country at war? I don't think so. Should we close the door and say never? That would be unfair. Can we forget about the balance in the region? We need to be cautious.
At least 71 children have been killed, while more than 100 have been injured so far since Russia launched its war on Ukraine. A Ukrainian parliament official announced the grim tally amid outrage over Wednesday's bombing of a children's hospital in Mariupol. That attack left at least 3 dead, including a young girl. Russia, however, is dismissing the alleged bombing as fake news. A Russian envoy to the United Nations claims the targeted facility was a former maternity hospital that had been taken over by Ukraine's military. He says Ukrainian troops in the building were firing on Russian forces. The figures from the humanitarian crisis unfolding in Ukraine have been staggering. As of the latest count, at least 2 million have been forced to flee. Those who remain are beginning to run out of food, water, and other basic needs. Joining us now to tell us more about the dire situation in Ukraine is the head of the National Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Maria Ermina Valdeavilla-Gallardo. Ia, good morning to you. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to the show.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and thank you very much to your show for inviting UNHCR.
Well, the images are harrowing. No way to determine the actual number, but as I've just reported, the reports have it that 2 million have fled Ukraine so far. And this is what we know. We know, Ia, that women and children are the most vulnerable in conflict situations. And you need only to look at the images coming from Ukraine to prove exactly just that. You have families getting separated. You have women now in charge of getting their families to safety, while the men stayed to fight in the war. Ia, what can you tell us about what is the latest on the ground? What is your monitoring telling you as we speak?
Thank you, Carmina. As of yesterday, we've had received reports that there is about 2.3 million already who have fled Ukraine as a result of the crisis. And yes, you are correct. Majority of the numbers of those who have fled Ukraine are women and children. You have rightfully said, these women and children are at the higher risk of being exploited, of experiencing gender-based violence while they leave. We've also gathered some reports that there may be some unaccompanied children who have tried to fled Ukraine and ask for safety in the neighboring countries, which of course UNHCR is closely monitoring in terms of the protection needs and requirements of this vulnerable population.
Yeah, I want to go into that right now, because there are accompanied children, at least reports of unaccompanied children fleeing Ukraine. I know that you're monitoring this. So if only up to where you can share with us, what are you hearing from the ground, and how are these children doing, and where are they going, and, you know, how did they even find themselves in this situation wherein they're unaccompanied and they're treading these dangerous grounds and following the path to safety while they're just on their own?
It is indeed a very harrowing situation. Imagine if you were a child and you were traveling without your parents to a foreign place on your own. That is why UNHCR considers that it's important for the national authorities to link up the efforts of the UN community in the borders with their national child protection systems. And at the same time, it is also important to activate the immediate response in terms of family reunification, tracing where the family members are of these unaccompanied children. We also highlight the need for trained caregivers to be able to provide psychosocial support to these unaccompanied children who are still reeling from the trauma of the crisis.
And as you highlight all these needs, Ia, have you been seeing any evidence as well that this is also being provided? Or is the situation just so fluid and volatile that there's still no protection or no system in place to address the needs of these refugees, be it women or children?
Well, the good thing about it is that the neighboring countries in Ukraine have opened up their borders. And I know you have heard of this temporary protection directive where the state authorities made sure that they allow into safety those fleeing Ukraine in order to find protection. And that's the role of UNHCR, basically to ensure that what the national authorities have been providing is complemented and augmented, not just by UNHCR, but by the UN humanitarian and country team in general. So what we do is to consistently monitor what is happening on the ground. And if there are any concerns that might require the assistance of the UN community and the humanitarian community, we make sure that we work with the national authorities. We have heard some very good news about how the national government and the local communities have been extending their support. You know, Carmina, even the children, in Poland have been donating toys so that those children who are fleeing Ukraine would be able to still get in touch, you know, with their childhood. There are child-friendly spaces that we are advocating for the national authorities to come up with. And this is something where UNHCR and the rest of the humanitarian country team is ready to provide.
Here's the thing, though, Iya, that's what we know when they do get to safety. But before they get there, what do we know? How are these women and children coping? And are already reports reaching you that there have been gender-based violence that's happening already?
Well, right now, we are able to document 854,000 internally displaced people. And the response on IDPs is a UN humanitarian countrywide. So the refugee response is being led by UNHCR at the borders. But when it comes to internally displaced people, these are concerted efforts being done by the UN country team. And the good thing about it is that the UN has launched a flash appeal in the amount of 1.7 billion, which is intended to provide for the most pressing needs of the internally displaced people who remain in Ukraine. And we acknowledge that there are life-saving requirements at this point, including fuel, cash, food, materials to reinforce the bunkers. And that is where the funding should be going. As to the gender-based violence, while we have not yet received reports on GBV, we know that in instances of mass displacement and influx, women and children are at the highest risk of facing gender-based violence, including exploitation and trafficking. And so we are constantly monitoring this within Ukraine and within the borders in order to ensure that once we have been able to document concrete cases of GBV, trafficking and exploitation, the same are being acted upon through the referral mechanisms in the respective state that has been hosting them.
We do know that the Philippines, in their statement before the UN General Assembly, stood in solidarity with the General Assembly. They condoned what was happening. They condoned the invasion. And here at home, there was also an executive order that was passed into institutionalizing refugee protection. Is that enough of a response coming from the Philippines?
You know, for UNHCR, we are very pleased, and more than pleased, but extremely proud of how the Philippines has been able to maintain its humanitarian tradition. Philippines has hosted 9 waves of refugees since the late 1800s, and it has continued to show that it is the role model within the region when it comes to ensuring that people who are fleeing danger are able to find sanctuary in the Philippines. We are very much aware of this Executive Order Number 163, which is a landmark issuance by the Philippine government, because it finally institutionalized and gives potential attention to the needs of refugees and stateless persons in terms of the services, embracing them into the community and allowing them to be able to rebuild their lives. And Carmina, we have also been very grateful to the Filipino community here in the Philippines and abroad for consistently supporting us through their donations and being able to support our interventions and responses in Ukraine. And I would like to take this opportunity to encourage other kababayans, other Filipinos to have a visit at donate.unhcr.org/Ukraine, because this is a way by which us here in the Philippines and those outside of the Philippines who have concern for the people fleeing Ukraine would be able to support.
You know, yeah, when you talk about the response, you know, you got to talk about how this has also affected young people all over the world. You know how the internet is now ubiquitous, right? And a lot of people, a lot of children actually are getting their information from the internet. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that a lot of the young kids really are aware of what is happening in Ukraine. And is there any way as well how these children can help? I mean, of course, you know, there are their parents who we hope are responsible enough to really explain to them the situation and the ramifications of what is going on in Ukraine. First of all, let's get into that. How do you explain what is happening now to children themselves? And how can children help all those little kids who have also been displaced in Ukraine?
Thank you. I am a parent myself, so I am very much aware of the trauma that these information would bring to children who would be reading human rights issues that is happening amidst the crisis. So as a parent, I think it is important for family members to have a serious and open conversation on what is happening, with emphasizing that what we can do as children is to support fundraising activities. There are fundraising activities going around. There are also opportunities for discussion in schools. I myself have been able to share this in the school of my child. So I think being in touch with our humanity is the core of the messaging that we can give to our children, and that we have a responsibility to make sure that the humanity is intact.
Is there also a way, because you mentioned this a while ago, and this has been appearing in various news reports coming out of Ukraine and coming out of the borders, those boxes set up for children to take whatever they can, like toys, maybe a little toy truck, a little stuffed dinosaur and all that. Is that something as well that Filipino children can take part of, round up their old toys, those that can still be used, and maybe give them to the children of Ukraine? Is that something that can be done?
Well, that could be one way, but we are quite far from where the hostility is happening. And at this point, crowdsourcing is on the pooled funding, which will allow the UNHCR and the humanitarian country team to provide for the most pressing and basic needs. But there are other ways that could also be done. And as children, it could be through information awareness and the social media. And if it comes that Philippines would also already have people fleeing from Ukraine being hosted in the Philippines, then closer to home, that could be a good way to be able to provide support.
But the more important thing is keep the discussion going.
Exactly.
Talk about it, explain it, because as you said, at the core of this issue is humanity. And these are, you know, we're talking about the next generation of leaders here that now it may be just a story to them, something that they find interesting, but you'll never know with the way things are going.
Yeah.
At least we don't hope that it just might be the reality also one day, but it's a good opportunity now for this to be a lesson, right? A learning opportunity for the kids as well. Thank you so much, Maria Ermina Valdea Villa Gallardo, head of the National Office of the UNHCR. That's, of course, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. We really appreciate all the things that you do there. Thank you for joining us today. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina. Good afternoon.
Right. We are still going to talk about the effects of the war in Ukraine. See, oil prices, that continues to decline or continued to decline Thursday as Russia vowed to fulfill its contractual obligations. Global benchmark Brent crude slipped 1.6% to $109 a barrel, while the U.S. WTI crude lost 2.5% to settle at $106 a barrel. The decline comes after oil prices had their biggest daily drop in 2 years Wednesday. In a meeting, Russian President Vladimir Putin said the country would continue to meet their contractual obligations for energy supplies, but Russian oil is being shunned following their invasion of Ukraine. The U.S. has moved to ease its sanctions on Venezuelan oil and to seal a nuclear deal with Iran, which could lead to increased oil supplies. The market is also anticipating further stockpile releases as coordinated by the International Energy Agency. The war in Ukraine and massive sanctions against Russia will force the International Monetary Fund to lower its global growth forecast. IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva says the conflict has triggered a contraction in global trade, sending food and energy prices sharply higher. She adds the surge in inflation triggered by the war could accelerate monetary policy tightening in many countries. The global lender had already lowered its global growth forecast at 4.4% this year, from 4.9, citing risks linked to COVID, inflation, and U.S. monetary tightening. The IMF is due to release its updated world economic outlook in mid-April. More business news now. Philippine trade deficit narrows to $4.7 billion in January from $5.6 billion in December of last year. Exports rose modestly, up nearly 9% year-on-year. Of the top 10 major commodity groups in terms of the value of exports, five recorded annual increases led by coconut oil. Meanwhile, imports gained 27.5% following a rise in nine out of the top 10 major imports led by medicinal and pharmaceutical products. China is the main supplier of imports in the country. On the flip side, the U.S. is the Philippines' top export partner, followed by China, Japan, Hong Kong, and Singapore. Going to take a break now. Up ahead, a hybrid strain of the Delta and Omicron variants emerges in Europe. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Still no progress in the latest talks between Ukrainian and Russian officials as the Russian invasion enters its third week. A Ukrainian parliament official says at least 71 children have died due to Russia's invasion. The latest COVID-19 variant, Deltacron, detected in Europe. And the World Health Organization warns Filipinos against letting their guard down against the pandemic. The tandem of Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio wooing voters in Laguna. Let's get an update from our correspondent Joyce Balancho. Joyce, over to you.
Carmina, for the second time, former Senator Bongbo Marcos and his running mate, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte, visited the province of Laguna. A campaign rally was held for them at the provincial capital grounds in Santa Cruz this morning. Also present were some of their senatorial candidates. Mayor Duterte, in her speech, promised the Lagunenses that she will find a way to bring back jobs that were lost because of the COVID-19 pandemic. She said now that many Filipinos are vaccinated and have received a booster shot, there is no reason for the government not to open the economy further. For his part, Marcos said he will help small businesses that were affected by the pandemic and will also provide assistance to the agricultural sector to ensure food security. Laguna is the fourth province in the country with the highest number of registered voters, with more than 2,044,000 for this coming election. In the 2015 vice presidential race, Carmina, it was a very tight competition between Marcos, who garnered 35% of the total votes of the province, versus Lenny Robredo, who got 31%. In an ambush interview, Marcos said that after seeing the crowd this morning in Laguna, he feels confident that he will again win in the province. Last December, Marcos and Duterte visited San Pablo and San Pedro City here in Laguna, where they were also welcomed by the local officials of the province. Earlier, I was able to interview some students who attended today's rally, and they said that they believe Marcos is the one who can fix the educational system that was disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic. They also said they are not concerned whether or not Marcos attends debates and presidential forums, since he usually talks about his plans for the country during campaign rallies. Now, after here in Santa Cruz, the UNI team will have a motorcade later this afternoon in Benita. Then after that, they will proceed to Santa Rosa for another campaign rally. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Joyce. You take care and you keep safe. And from there, let's now head on over to Negros Occidental for the campaign of presidential bet, Vice President Lenny Robredo. Our very own Adrian Ayala now joins us with the latest. Adrian, go ahead.
Adrian? Yes, Carmina.
Go ahead.
Yes, Carmina, just a few local officials here in Negros Occidental are accompanying Vice President Lenny Robredo, Senator Kiko Pangilinan, and their senatorial candidates in their sorties here in the province. Among the local officials publicly supporting VP Lenny, or at least showing up in her mini rallies, are Negros Occidental Governor Bong Lacson, Tagay City Mayor Ferdy Marañon, 2nd District Representative Leo Rafael Cueva. But for VP Lenny, it does not matter as long as she has the support of ordinary Negrenses who are showing up in their mini rallies this morning in San Carlos and Sagay City. VP Lenny and Senator Kiko are echoing their message of Gobyernong Tapat Angat Buhay sa Lahat, or Angat Buhay para sa Lahat, showing Negrenses what they call as receipts of their past work as a public servant, such as the Sagip Saka Act for Senator Kiko and the programs of the Office of the Vice President for VP Lenny. Rain or shine, Negrenses are showing up here in mini rallies. As they also pledge to show up later in Bacolod City in the huge people's rally at the Paglaom Stadium. We are expecting, aside from VP Lenny and her team, of course, various volunteer artists led by River Maya performing again, be capped by Street Dancing Alam Mascara Festival. Back to you, Carmina.
All right. Adrian, what can you tell us about what happened overnight? There was a conversation happening on Twitter. There were people calling for help that they all of a sudden couldn't get to the location because the bus trips were canceled. Meantime, you do have a statement coming from the bus owners themselves saying that there was no cancellation whatsoever. So what really happened there, Adrian?
If you are referring about the bus trips being canceled, VP Lenny addressed that briefly in her message in Sagay City. She said that it does not seem that that was what happened. And also, what we have seen are some supporters who came. In a bus at the Sagay City mini rally. That's it so far. But so far, things are going smoothly, despite the reports of threats against VP Lenny, at least online. Things are going smoothly in the rallies of VP Lenny and her team. Carmina?
All right. Thanks a lot. Adrian Ayalin there joining us today. Thanks, Adrian. You take care and you keep safe. Well, from there, we're now going to get an update on the campaign activities of Aksyon Demokratiko Standard Bearer, Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso. Our very own George Carino joins us now with the latest. George?
Hi, Casey. Good afternoon. It was a different caller provided today at the campaign sortie of Mayor Isko Moreno Dumagoso here in Cavalatuan City. Shortly after his press conference, he met supporters outside Harvest Hotel in Cavalatuan City Friday morning, and he even crossed the street to reach out to people holding printouts of support for Yorme. But surprisingly, he managed to approach people wearing shirt pinks who came out from the Lenny HQ here in Cabanatuan City. And to his surprise, he was also met with the kind gesture of the Kakam Pinks in Cabanatuan. But that situation is a far cry from the press conference that Mayor Moreno had at the Harvest Hotel. It was where he answered the reporters' questions on the way that the other opponents are packaging themselves. He said that to use the term laylayan is not even appropriate, because it simply means, according to the mayor, that you're looking down at the people at the poverty line. Simply, he said, anybody could call them as mahira, and that will be very simple. And for Senator Ferdinand Marcos Jr., he did not presented the exact name of the opponent, but it was an allusion and reference to the windmill. He said that it can the problems of the country cannot be solved by merely playing on an electric fan. There were other issues discussed by the mayor of Manila during the campaign sortie here in Cabanatuan, and right now he's moving on a motorcade in the town of Talavera, which is in the fringes of Cabanatuan City. Casey?
All right. Thanks a lot, George Carino, there joining us on the line. Take care, George. Keep safe. Next on In Focus, we'll get to know more about Vice Presidential Candidate Manny Lopez of the Workers and Peasants Party. Mr. Lopez will speak with us next Tuesday, March 15th. If you have any questions, you can send them in to ANC Alerts on Twitter and ANC247 on Facebook. Don't forget to use the hashtag ANC In Focus. As the world marks 2 years since COVID-19 was declared a global pandemic, now comes a new coronavirus hybrid. Dubbed Deltacron, the strain has genes from both the Delta and Omicron variants. The World Health Organization confirms Deltacron is already in some European countries like France, but it says it has not seen any changes in the severity of COVID-19. The WHO says testing must continue to control the spread of the virus.
WHO is concerned that several countries are drastically reducing testing. This inhibits our ability to see where the virus is, how it's spreading, and how it's evolving. Testing remains a vital tool in our fight against the pandemic as part of a comprehensive strategy.
The Philippine Health Department says it is closely studying whether or not Deltacron is already in the country. And the Philippines not yet ready to de-escalate to a so-called alert level zero. That's according to infectious diseases expert Dr. Cecilia Maramba Lazarte. And she says, even if the number of cases continues to go down, COVID-19 is still present.
Well, not right now, not yet tomorrow, maybe not yet in the next few weeks. That's okay. One good news na hindi tayo yung may matataas na cases. But since there is air travel and people coming in and out and restrictions have been taken out, The possibility na may pumasok pa rin na COVID-19 is always there.
Earlier, Philippine Health Secretary Francisco Duque spoke of the possibility of shifting the country to alert level zero. An update now on the Philippine vaccination campaign. The health department says some 10.8 million booster shots have been administered so far. The DOH adds, experts are still looking at studies on the benefits of booster shots for those under the age of 18. The agency, meanwhile, says adequate measures are in place to extend the shelf life of vaccines.
About 12 to 13 million doses of AstraZeneca have been extended shelf life from the manufacturer, and we are awaiting the concurrence of the FDA if they will approve this one. There are also requests for approval of extension for Gamaleya being process. We're also looking at some Pfizer and Moderna that may be extended.
Despite the easing of restrictions and the lower COVID infection rates in the Philippines, the WHO reminds the public the health crisis isn't over yet. Acting WHO representative to the Philippines, Dr. Rajendra Yadav and Dr. Sangjun Moon stressed the need to continue aggressive vaccinations as the country has yet to reach its inoculation target. They're urging Filipinos to maintain minimum health measures such as using face masks and observing physical distancing to keep the numbers down. They also want government to start preparing for the next possible pandemic by strengthening the health system. Well, Dr. Rajendra Yadav now joins us to discuss the COVID situation here in the country. Dr. Raj, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina.
Right, so it's very, very clear in your piece, is the pandemic over soon? You said, Dr. Raj, the pandemic is not over yet. So the question is, what should be done at this point when restrictions are being eased as we speak?
So first of all, we should remember that the pandemic is not over, and it may not be over for the next many months. The reason is we are seeing many surges of cases happening within the Western Pacific region around us. We have seen huge surges in Japan, Malaysia, Korea. So when we have these surges, there's always a chance that we may have a new variant of concern, and then it may come to Philippines, as we have seen with the previous variant. So we have to be ready. We should not lower our guards, and we should keep wearing the mask and maintaining safe distance while the government continues to help us with the vaccinations.
The surges that you mentioned happening in other countries, is it inevitable, Dr. Raj, that the same will happen here in the Philippines?
So we had the Omicron wave already, and the surges that are happening in these other neighboring countries are due to the same variant, Omicron. So they were able to push back the wave a little, but it was inevitable for them. For now, we are safe. But if we start lowering our guard or we don't vaccinate enough people, we can never be sure if the new variants hit us.
Well, now is the time to do the necessary preparations. Now is the time to prepare for the next wave. Do you think that enough is being done to prepare for that next wave?
So one thing is commendable is that Filipinos have been very cooperative with the public health and social measures. Like Filipinos have one of the highest proportion of people using masks. So we have to continue that. But at the same time, we have to cooperate with the government and help those who are not immunized enough or not immunized at all to get vaccinated quickly, because now we still have 2.4 million elderly who are not vaccinated at all, not even a single dose. So until we get everybody vaccinated and also get them the booster doses, we can never be safe.
We're going to talk more about the unvaccinated in a bit. But first, I want to talk about the subvariants that are being reported. You have the BA.2, and then you also have the Deltacron. What can you tell us about what you know so far about these variants, Dr. Raj?
So Omicron BA.2 was the variant that predominated during the surge we had in Philippines in January. And the so-called Deltacron, we are still studying its impact. We have found it in a few countries, and WHO is gathering evidence on its transmissibility and severity, whether it's any different from the Omicron, and we'll let countries know if we find such evidence.
There was a concern raised by a doctor just before we got you on air, and she said with the easing of restrictions, chances are that these variants might just enter the Philippines once again. What are your thoughts regarding that?
So we have to balance health with the socioeconomics of any country. We cannot forever be locked up. So easing of restrictions is fine as long as we follow the basics of preventing COVID transmission, which we already know. It's not new anymore. We have to vaccinate, we have to use mask, distancing, all that we have to continue. So then we can continue to be safe. But as soon as we start lowering our guards and our mask, then we will face difficulties and deaths.
And of course, you mentioned this a while ago, the unvaccinated. Dr. Raj, what about the large pockets of unvaccinated individuals in many provinces and cities here in the Philippines? What is the danger that that situation still exists 2 years into this pandemic?
So we have to change our approach, and we are happy to see that Department of Health and other partners are already doing that. So the first 50% were easy to be vaccinated because they were the ones who were keen to come to us. But now is the time we go to them, to the people who are still not vaccinated, by doing house-to-house vaccinations and close-to-home vaccinations. And the government has already planned that in the next vaccination day, National Vaccination Day. And we are happy to see that the government will focus on these pockets of unvaccinated people, because if you have big pockets of people who are unvaccinated, they'll not only be the ones who suffer from COVID and die, but also they may create avenues for variants of concern.
They may just become the breeding ground for the next variant.
Right.
Dr. Raj, what, upon your assessment, what are the challenges that government is facing right now so that you have this situation still where there are still large pockets of unvaccinated individuals in the country?
So the government, of course, has problems because these people who are unvaccinated are in far-flung areas. Of course, they may also be in smaller pockets in areas in cities, but most of these are difficult to reach, and that requires lots of resources. But people have to commit to getting vaccinated, not themselves but also their loved ones, especially people who may be elderly in their family. So it has to work both ways, the government and the people working together.
What do you think can make the government response even more efficient?
So the government has already done a commendable job to get to 60% of the people vaccinated. The WHO says that we need to get to 70% of the people vaccinated, so we are not far off. But now the danger is that since we have less cases, less deaths, people are shying away from getting vaccinated or boosted with vaccines. So the government has to convince these people that the pandemic is not behind us. It's still there, and the next wave could hit us anytime. So please get boosted if you are vaccinated. And if you're not vaccinated at all, get vaccinated, especially people who may not understand the importance, like the elderly people. We have to support them more.
So the conversation has to be ongoing, because you're right when you said that not a few people think that the booster shots are important. What kind of messaging do you think must be done so that people will get those booster shots?
So people need to remember that the immunity derived from natural infection or vaccination, both wane over time. They become lesser and lesser. So in 6 months, the vaccine that they had taken, the effects, the positive effects will dwindle, will reduce. So that's the message we have to keep telling people, so that they understand that once vaccinated does not mean forever vaccinated.
By the way, while we're just talking about booster shots, other countries are now discussing about a possible fourth shot. What does the WHO think about this?
So until now, WHO is only talking about the first booster and recommending countries that we cover those people who are still not received any vaccine, any dose. But yes, we are also gathering evidence on whether a fourth dose will help.
And finally, Dr. Raj, this is not going to be the last pandemic. Every expert that you talk to says that. But then in the Philippine context now, how do you make the pandemic response future-proof?
So it's right. This is definitely not the last pandemic, and the other may come sooner than we know. The reason is that we have global mobility, and that promotes faster transmission of infections. So we have to future-proof our health system by making them more resilient, by capacity-building our health workers. But that's not enough. We have to make the people self-resilient too. Through empowering them with self-care and improving their health literacy, so that both communities and individuals on one side and health system on the other can work together. And then we have to have a strong plan. The Department of Health is already doing that. Strong plan to face future pandemics.
Explain one thing to us, please, Dr. Raj, because you're in the Philippines, you're seeing numbers go down. But when you look at neighboring countries, take, for example, Hong Kong and South Korea, they're seeing record numbers. What's the explanation behind that?
Yes, you're right. Countries like South Korea, Vietnam, Japan, China, Malaysia, they are all seeing surges. The reason is that they have the Omicron wave now, while Philippines already had it in January. So after each wave, people become sort of immunized. Their immunity goes up through the natural infection, plus combined with the immunization through vaccines. So these countries, they were able to hold off the Omicron wave. But once it gets released in the communities, then, of course, we know it's a very transmissible disease. So they have surges in March compared to us we had in January.
And we're pretty sure that what they're having is the Omicron wave and not, you know, because of the new variant that was detected, the Deltacron.
Yes, all the reports that are being submitted to the WHO global level, we find that 99.6% or something are due to the Omicron that we had here in January.
All right. Thank you so much. We're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Rajendra Yadav, the acting WHO representative to the Philippines, we appreciate you coming to the show and joining us today. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you.
And moving now to some entertainment news. Before we go, American actor Jesse Smollett has been sentenced to 30 months probation and 150 days in jail for staging a hate crime against himself. The one-time star of the TV drama Empire was also ordered to pay $120,000 in restitution and a $25,000 fine. Smollett was found guilty by a jury in December for 5 counts of felony disorderly conduct. Prosecutors said the actor lied to police when he told them he was accosted by 2 masked strangers in January of 2019. He was arrested a month later after it was revealed that he paid 2 men to stage the attack in an effort to raise his show business profile. The director of the Marvel film Black Panther arrested in the U.S. city of Atlanta. He was suspected of robbing a bank. But as this report tells us, it is all a misunderstanding.
Body cam video released by Atlanta police on Wednesday shows Ryan Coogler, director of the blockbuster movie Black Panther, being arrested after being mistaken for a bank robber. The incident took place back in January when Coogler was arrested at a Bank of America branch after attempting to withdraw a large sum of money from his account. According to Variety reporting, the teller became suspicious when Coogler passed a note that read, "I'd like to be discreet." The bank teller misinterpreted the situation as an attempted robbery and called 911. Officers arrived and one could be seen unholstering his gun just before putting Coogler in handcuffs. It took about 10 to 15 minutes for the officers to sort out the confusion. In the video, Kugler appeared shaken by the incident and asked for the officers' names and badge numbers. Kugler issued a statement Wednesday morning saying, quote, "This situation should never have happened. However, Bank of America worked with me and addressed it to my satisfaction, and we have moved on." Bank of America did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
That'll do it for today. Thanks for keeping us company the whole week this week. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the news channel.